Maddie. He's been, everything okay? But we've got the recorder. So there we go. More bracketing fun. Last name is less than H, first name is Daniel. Where there's a, you know, Daniel Baker, Daniel Gaston. Where can we bracket there? Because we have not an equality but a range match here, we can bracket on that, but we can't look deeper into it using just index entries because progress has to grab all these and then essentially examine them one by one by one to figure out what are the two records in this case that we actually need. So that's when you get a bracket, but you still throw out a lot of those records. As I get near the end of my talk and talk about the log manager and some of the information it gives you some very great information about that. And that came out in version 10. So it's been around for a while. First name begins B. Well, there's Betty, Bob, two of them there. But we can't do any bracketing there because we're not starting at the beginning of our index. And that is one of the key things. I run into people that kind of just don't realize, no, you have to start at the beginning of an index and see if you can work your way deeper and deeper into it to see how much you can use.
You would still wind up with the records you want in something that small.
Well, this is a small data set.
Just you're not going by an index.
Exactly. Imagine rather than, you know, less than 20 records here, this was 20 million records.
Yeah.
This is not able to use an index, so you get the entire table, and then you have to walk through them and go, I want this one. No. I want this one. No. Away you go. So it's not performant. So how can we predict what we're going to do? Anyone starting to sense alliteration here? It's a little forced at times, but bear with me. Most people talk about choosing an index. What index is chosen? And really, that's a very misleading statement. It's not what index was chosen, it's what index survived. Progress, the index selection engine, is really the index survivor engine because we eliminate, we don't select. We eliminate until we have one index left. So really, if you have a query against a table, you start off with saying every index in that table is a possible candidate to use. And then we look at the pieces that make up our query and say, hey, can I eliminate some of these options? Can I eliminate some of these? And when you get down to one guy left, last stander, that's the index you use. So it's not choose an index, it's survive.
What index survives?
I kind of talk about the tokens in a where clause. So it's field, condition, value, you know, last name equals something, first name greater than something, all those things there. You want to examine each token, and each token may or may not be applied to one or more indices. And so based upon how that works out, like I said, you start eliminating indices until you get down to one left, and that's the guy you use. And yes, there is the possibility of multiple index selection, which doesn't happen nearly as much as everyone wants it to, or in the way they want it to, and I'll talk about that a little bit as well. So far, so good. Everyone's very quiet. But no one seems to be sleeping yet. No snores. So here's our index rules. This is the page you print out. If your query contains the word contains, that is the keyword only applicable to word indexes. So progress says, oh, it's a word index, that one, done. Very simple. Otherwise, it says, well, actually, I've never tried to use contains against a table that doesn't have a word index. I'm guessing it'll throw an error.
It does.
Okay, there you go. One of those, why would you ever bother, but I'm sure someone has. If you have a unique index on your table and you have all the fields in that unique index involved in an equality match, guess what? Progress will either find one record or no records and says, that's all, that's it, I'm done. I don't need to look any further, so it picks that index. Otherwise, it looks for the most part, which index has the most active equality matches.
So then if you have some that has a word index, you're done, you're getting the whole...
If you use contains, you get the word index, done.
And you get the whole file?
Well, no, you're using the word index. Contains against a word index will pull the appropriate records and you're done. Word indexes are special animals and they do essentially bracket. They'll find the appropriate records and away you go. You're not going to retrieve the entire table and apply the word index against it. It's going to pull the particular positive hits.
When you say most active, what do you mean by active?
Take out the word active.
Active index?
Well, yeah. If the index is deactivated, it doesn't matter. It doesn't count. So
is that what
take out the word active. It's just it's the way Progress phrased it. I'm going to blame them. I'll throw them under the bus. So sometimes you'll have indices that have one field in them, but usually they have two or three or five. Some of the worst I've seen. Has anyone seen one with more than 14 fields in an index?
Holy moly.
14 fields, two of which were x80 character fields. That's when I actually saw in reality, Progress has a limitation on how much information you can put into an index entry. It's pretty large now. Back at that point, it was a lot smaller. And we had two entries into this table for a company that distributed electronics, music, and stuff. And the CD version had President of the United States of America. That blew an error. The tape version had President of the United States of AM. And that was just short enough that it fit into the index entry limit. And that worked. So, so most equality matches. But guess what? If I have a field with, or if I have a table and one index has two fields and one index has five fields, if I match those two on that guy, not unique indices, but I have a quality match on two fields. On the other index, I have a quality match on four fields, but not all five. It'll choose a two-field index because it says, oh, a full match is better than more equality matches.
By the way.
So one of those exceptions to the rule. Otherwise, it says, and again, we're kind of walking through, all my indexes are an option, are a possibility. I start looking at my tokens. Do I have any contains? No. Okay, they're still all an option. Do I have any unique indices where I have full matches, all equality? No. Okay, they're still all an option. How about equality matches? Well, I've got some equality matches in my query, so that means I'll probably use this one or this one or this one. Yes. They all have two fields, equality matches that hit. So I'm down to, say, three indices. Well, now I'm going to check and say, are any of them, you know, do any of them have range matches? Again, then, of the ones that are left, do any of them have more range matches than any of the others? Well, I don't have any range matches at all, or they all have the same number, so I keep going. Do I have any sort matches? Anyone know what a sort match is?
Buy.
When you use the by phrase, you get a sort match. So, again, can I weed out indices? Do I have a single survivor? If not, of my candidates, is one of my candidates the primary index? If so, I'm going to take that guy. Last but not least, well, actually it is last and least. Otherwise, if one of my surviving candidates is not the primary index, we go alphabetically because you've got to use something to choose it. Unless it's a temp table. If it's a temp table, you go in the order defined. I haven't seen anyone be bitten by that error. I actually came across that when I was writing up some demo code to prove a point, and it didn't work the way I wanted it to. And I played with it, and I played with it, and went, oh, look, another exception.
Well, in the first version that we had where we had temp tables, we did do them alphabetically by name, but it didn't work right because of the different character sets people were using. So we changed it.
So there you go. Straight from the Gus's mouth. So these are your rules for choosing an index. And again, these are the rules of survival. You start off with all your indexes are a possible candidate to be used, and you work and see what you can eliminate until you get down to one index. Usually, somewhere in here will resolve it. If not, by the time you hit here, one of your candidates is very typically the primary index, but if it's not, first one alphabetically. Questions so far? Pretty good? Alrighty. Multiple indices. Since version 7, Progress allowed the ability to use multiple indices. When version 7 first came out, all sorts of people went crazy and said, no more multi-field indexes. Make everything a single-field index. Oh, yeah. No, that doesn't work the way you want it to. Good luck with that. But I saw some people that went there. So there are rules for this as well, and it takes you back to your, is it middle school or high school when you did set theory. Unions versus intersections of sets, etc. When you have multiple index use, when you've chosen multiple indexes, it is only used to bracket records. Now your bracket can still be a bracket of one record, but it is a bracket. And I stress that it's usually not a big thing, but it has to do with some of the other possible language constructs you can use. Trying to remember, there was a point there now and I'm blanking on it. It's my own lunch getting me. Oh, the other big thing is because it's a bracket, return order is not guaranteed. That's another good reason to use a by phrase so that you can say, whatever you give me back, I'm going to force you to put it in this order. Normally, if you return, if you have one index to, if you resolve down to one index, it gets returned in that index order, unless you have a by phrase that overrides that. If you end up using multiple indexes, it's not going to pick one to return it by. It's going to give it to you in a consistently inconsistent order. Nothing you can rely on. It's just like saying, give me all my stuff back in row ID order. Well, that's great until you've had some adds and deletes and updates and things get moved within the within your physical directories. And then all of a sudden it's a different order. So return order cannot be guaranteed. That's kind of an important one. If you used and, condition and condition and condition and condition, that is the most restrictive. It's also the easiest for people to kind of grasp. When everything is ended together, all we care about is equality matches as far as can multiple indices be used. And it has to use all the components of the index in the equality match and no unique indices. Because guess what? If I use all the fields of a unique index in my query and I have equality matches, it says, I found either one record or no records. So it doesn't care about any other index use because it has a unique index to use. So pretty straightforward. Actually happens more than you might think because typically people, when you code, you say condition and condition and condition and away you go. If you use ORs are the union of a set rather than the intersection. So it's more permissive. It's more inclusive. It's not a mean like I am. I'm a very mean person. So you have to at least obviously use the lead components of an index to be able to choose that index and either quality or range matches. So if I say condition, you know, where field equals value or, and that was leading component of one index, or field two greater than value, and that's the leading component of another index, it says or, I have an equality or a range match, well, I end up with two candidates and I use them both. So it's easier to get multiple index use when you use ORs, and then you really need to have a by phrase to make sure. So prevent, what are we talking about? I call this breaking the index engine. It's not really breaking the engine. It's saying, I don't care. I'm not going to use an index in the first place. Any guesses about what things don't use indices in the first place?
Row ID search.
I think you read ahead.
Something without a where clause.
No. If you don't have a where clause, I've got no unique index use, I've got no quality matches, I've got no sort range matches, I've got no sort matches. All my indices are still a candidate. So what do I hit? Primary index. And that is why when you just do for each table colon, you get the primary index. Because it goes through the rule, it says all my indices are a possibility, I have no contains, no unique matches, no qualities, no ranges, no sorts. What's the primary index? Use that. And that's the magic that makes that work. This is actually using an index, but when you say use index, this use index is not as bad as release, as the release statement, but it's one of those things where, to me, if I see that in code, it raises a huge red flag. The use of use index doesn't mean you're wrong, but it means you better be right. You better have done it for a very specific reason. And hopefully, you're a good enough programmer that you documented it in a big comment right above the use of that. Let's say I have a database and I have a table in there with information about people. And I track their gender. And this is a very non-PC database, so you're either male or female. And I track their age. And I have a nice even distribution of ages 1 to 100. I've got one of each. And I've got, you know, half of them are male, half of them are female. If I want to know all the men over 70, I have where gender equals male, equality match, and age greater than 70, range match. I said, and, so, which index do I use, age or gender? I will use gender because I have an equality match on gender, but using gender will return half my records, and then I have to parse through each one to match the age to get the 30% that I actually need. Whereas if I force it to use the age index, I'll get 30% of my table, and then I parse through it to get the half of that 30% that I need. It's more efficient. So there are definitely cases where it makes sense, and you know, because of my data and how I'm accessing that data, I need to force progress to use a specific index. But I better comment that like crazy so that someone coming along behind me goes, what are you doing? And takes it out of there and breaks things.
As long as we're still on this screen, back to row ID, just to make sure I'm pretty sure I understand row ID versus rec ID.
ID and rec ID, consider them to be the exact same thing. Rec ID is just a much earlier version.
I think I've got all that. What I'm curious about is what exactly happens to that row ID or rec ID when a record is deleted, and then you've got all these other records to add, or maybe you even add after you've deleted a record.
The question is, what happens with the row ID when you delete records out of the database? The row ID chosen has nothing to do with the data, but has very little to do directly with the data in that record. When you go to write a new record, progress says, I'm going to look in the blocks, and in newer versions it says, oh, this is for this table is constrained in the storage area, so there's some limitations there, but says, what's the first space I have available to put this new record? Here it is. The row ID is the physical address to that block and the offset within the block for where that record goes. So it says, I use that row ID, I build my index entries, and I get it all set up. If later on you delete it, well, there's nothing there, and we take the index entry out. It has nothing to do with actually where it fits in the index.
Okay,
it's just the data in there.
So if you've got 20 records and you delete record number or row ID 5.
Yeah.
You delete that. Now you come along and you want to add a new record, whether it's the same key or not, it will go back into 5 because that's where.
If 5 has enough space, it will go back into 5. If 5 doesn't have enough space, that this new record you're creating has much more data to it, it may skip 5 and go to 11, or it may put part of it in 5 and have essentially a jumper saying it starts in 5 and then the rest of it's in 11, so to speak. And it's not really row ID 11, it's just that space there. And that's a lot of stuff that's handled invisible to you, so you really shouldn't worry about that.
Okay.
But the big thing is row IDs don't use an index because you're telling it physically where is it on the disk. Go to this storage area, go to this block, go to this offset within the block, retrieve the record. That's why it's the fastest way to get a record, because that's really what, when you use an index, it's looking up a row ID and then finding it by the row ID.
Okay, the reason I asked is because, for example, if you're making changes and you want to save off what you've changed in case you have to go back and recover, okay? So if you try to recover by row ID or rec ID,
Once the data leaves the database, row ID is meaningless.
Yeah, okay.
That is why you should never have a field in your database that is row ID.
Okay.
It's really good for in-memory only. So last thing is something new, table scan. And again, you can say for each table scan, and you're deliberately telling progress, don't use an index. Just start going through your storage area and throwing the data at me. So this is for bulk accessing that information, specialized purposes, but it's much more efficient than anything else. If you need the entire table, here you go. This is not something you do for a report. This is probably typically for some kind of a large database utility type thing. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about it. If you've never used it, it's in the language now. when I say breaking the rules, these really, again, don't break rules. It's just that consider every little condition in your query to be a token. And any of these things I'm about to show you, progress says, I cannot use this to help me choose an index. So I'm going to ignore it, and I'm going to put it aside and look at the rest of the tokens I have and see if those help me select a surviving index. And then I will go back and take these ones that I had to skip and apply them to every result in that bracket. So where non-index field equals, well, guess what? If the field isn't in an index, I can't use it to choose an index. It seems obvious, but matches. You're looking for a string within another string. So you have to, by its very nature, look at every single record and say, is it in there? Is it in there? Is it in there? That's why we have contains and word indices if you're doing lots of text stuff. Matches by itself, it won't work. Begins works just fine. Begins is very similar to a greater than or a range match. Where not? If you say where field equals true, and that logical field is in the index, you can use it. If you say where not field, progress won't use that. Any guesses why? Guess will probably tell me if I'm right or wrong. How many values are possible for a logical field?
Three.
True, false, unknown. If I say we're not true, I have two possible values left. So, I don't know if anyone would want to admit to doing constructs like this. So how many people have seen constructs like the if-then-else function in a query? Wow, this makes it flexible, this makes it awesome, this makes it impossible for me to use that information to select an index survivor. I feel like I need to get a little orange ribbon for index survivor now. And then using a function on the field that is in the database, where substring database table or database field equals something, well, guess what? I have to perform that function against the value of every single record, therefore I can't actually examine it. Now, depending on what it is, sometimes you can use that function on the other side. Like rather than stringing a date field and comparing it to a string, you can take the date value you have and the string value you have, convert it to a date and compare it directly to the date field, something of that nature. But otherwise, think about it, you have to apply this function to every single record returned. So again, that condition cannot be used to pick an index survivor.
Right. But to your point, if you had a function on the other side,
that's just fine.
It evaluates that as a value and then uses that value.
Yes, if you have a function on the other side of it, it evaluates it and then uses it just fine. Also, where database field equals value versus where value equals database field. Same or different? Progress doesn't care. Progress does not care. Where field equals value and field equals value and field equals value, what if those fields are not in the same order as they exist in the index? Does progress care?
As long as all of them are.
With ends, progress says, oh, you're fine. With ors, you gotta go back to your whole logic thing. If you mix ends and ors, you gotta figure it out. But progress doesn't care about the orders they appear in either. However, people do. So putting fields in your query that are in the same order as they appear in the index is just self-documentation. But progress doesn't care. The engine doesn't care. How many people use unknown values in their database? Oh, come on.
Default values in fields?
For default values? One of the big things I've seen is something like, say, an order date. Or a status date. If it's unknown, it hasn't hit that status. If it has a value, that's when it hit it. Unknowns are another one of those used and abused features of progress. Because an unknown is both unique and non-unique by its very nature. So if I have a table with a unique index and a unique field, like say I saw a system where they created orders, but they had the ability to kind of do pre-orders. So they created an order record, but they left the order value, the unique one-up order number, they left it as unknown. And that meant it was a pre-order. It wasn't fully qualified to be an order. Well, guess what? Order was unique, but hey, since I give it an unknown value, I can have as many of these pre-orders as I want. The problem is, I think they were saying, I wanted to find all the pre-orders sorted by date of order entry. Well, guess what? Progress is kind of smart, and they say, I have a unique field equality, so I'm either going to find one record or no records. Well, if I'm doing that, there's no reason to bother trying to sort it. I'm just going to ignore the sort phrase. And so they got their information, and when they were programming it, it worked fine because they were testing with a very small set, and they just happened to get it in the same order each time. And then they put it into reality, and they essentially got random order every time this process ran. So, unique field, progress makes assumptions. I'm going to find one record or no records. And if you have more than one value return because you stuck an unknown in there, you have problems. What do you do? Don't do an equality, change it to a range match. And then you get what you want. So in that case, it was a simple fix once you discovered the problem. And this is just kind of more explanation about that. Just because you can have multiple records with an unknown value, that's a side effect. That's not something you should necessarily rely on. Records with unknown values sort different if that unknown value is in an index field or a non-index field. I don't think they've fixed that, or I don't know that they've even seen that as a problem. So it sorts different. Sorts. I don't remember which way it is. I think I have a demo to show you. Sorts high one way and low another way. Here's some knowledge base entries about this, etc. Be careful when you're dealing with unknown values and queries. It'll cause you grief. That's the moral of that story. Okay, speaking of which, hey, I told you I like to demonstrate stuff. There we go. So, again, all this demo code, if you leave me a card, I'll be happy to send it to you, or it's on Pug Central. But I like to make this all available. I have the most amazing database constructed out there possible. Let me go ahead and, in addition to using the sports database, I don't think I opened up this guy. Let me pull it up. There we go, test table report. I'll just open up Eclipse. So I have a database with a table called test table with fields called field 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pretty exciting.
Perfect. Awesome.
They're all character just to make it easy. If we look at the indices, you'll notice that all of these but field 5 are indexed. Where are my indices? There we go. I have an AA321, that's field 3, then 2, then 1. I have a ZZ123, that's field 1, 2, 3. I have a primary unique index, it's 4. So, primary unique index 4, I have a 321, a 123, 5 is not indexed. Everyone can keep that in their head. So what do we have here? Huh? Problems?
A mess.
So I have enough pauses in here. The comments come up and say, this is the kind of query I'm hitting. And again, you can see this code yourself. But let's just jump into it. So I'm displaying the full table. All I really show you here is, field 4, my unique field. I have a couple records with values. I have a couple records with unknowns in this guy. I have field 1, has unknowns and values. The other two index fields, they're just blank, that's fine. And my non-index field, I have some unknowns and some values. So there's my full data set, pretty massive. But it has all the variations that I need to show what I want to show. So I want to do, I want to explicitly use the unknown value in my query string. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of those. So if I say field 4, my unique field, greater than unknown, am I going to get data or not? How many people think I'm going to get results? How many people think I'm going to get the results I want? Okay. Actually, that works just fine. I said greater than unknown. So what do I get in my unique field? I get all my A, B, C, D. Because unknown on an index field sorts low. Now I say field is less than unknown, and I get nothing.
less than unknown. Oh, it's sorted low. If I said less than equal unknown, I probably would have gotten records. Okay. And I forgot to ask you guys, just to trip you up.
I'll do better.
Field five is my non-index field. Greater than unknown. Am I going to get records?
Yes.
I hear a yes. Am I going to get the records I want?
No.
It worked greater than, worked just fine for the primary unique index, but it didn't give me any data here because I'm using a index. Well, first of all, my query was on an unindexed field, so which index did I end up using? Primary index, because they were all candidates until I got down to that, picked the primary. So I'm using a primary index and sorting on a non-primary field, or searching a non-primary field. Less than question mark. Still nothing. Why shouldn't that work? Don't rely on unknowns in your queries. You'll have grief. And that is part of why I have the here I have. Although it's that motion right there. Okay, here's a couple of examples that don't contain references to the unknown value. So you think, well, they should all work just fine, right? But I do have unknown values in my data. So guess what? We're gonna get tripped up sooner or later. So if I say field four, my primary unique index, greater than B, I get B, C, D, and oh, there's my question marks because they suddenly sorted high. Okay. Field five equals AAA. Oh, that worked. That's nice. Are you ready for it to start breaking? Here we go. Field four greater than B and field five AAA. Well, okay, considers the unknown to be greater than. Remember how it sorted? We did greater than A, and I got B, C, D, and all my unknowns, so that's good. Field 4 greater than B. Field 1 equal A, A, A. Okay, let me back up. Field 4 greater than B. Field 1, A, A, A. I'm going to go back to the beginning and rerun this guy so we can remember what our data looked like. Field 4 greater than B, so I should have hit these. Field 1, AAA. It looks like there should have been a match. Right?
No, field 4.
I believe it said field 4 greater than B.
Okay.
And when I did that before, I got all these records. Mm. I also said field 1 was AAA. So you'd think it would hit that record. And what'd I get? Nothing. So So there we go. When I did field five, the non-index field, it worked. When I do an index field greater than B, you think, well, there's a match. I can look at my data. This is not too much different from an earlier query. It should work fine, but no, it doesn't. So, have fun with the program later. Just trying to show you some good examples. Even when you don't use unknowns in your query, if you have them in the data, things happen. And when I say things happen, it's usually bad things happen.
Unpredictable,
yeah. And, you know, so there you go. Hopefully you learned a couple things. Starting with, be careful of unknown values. If you have a user-defined function and you use that to assign a value into an index field, such as a function that says create order number, and you pull something back and you stick it in an index field, if you had index fields assigned before the field where you assigned the UDF into it, you'd get corruption in your index. Very typically, what you would end up seeing is someone would do that as a separate statement. So they'd say, assign order num equals get order num blah, period, assign all the rest of the data. I can't remember why I got an explanation for this once. Some older knowledge bases say, hey, it was fixed in 83C. I found some earlier ones, hey, it's 10.2B. So in theory, You're all good, because we're all on 11, right? Actually. Who here is on 10? Anyone on 9? Anyone earlier than 9? A couple. Legacy stuff? Yeah, we had a version 6 client pop up last year, a year and a half ago. About 4 years ago, we had a version 4 client pop up.
So what?
Yeah.
We had another client we did work for a while. They were buying version 10 licenses, or they were paying for version 10 licenses, but getting sent code for version 6 because they had done a lot of HLC stuff where you can actually modify the progress executables. And so they had to keep their application in 6. So they're current on maintenance. Anyway, problems there. So let's get into planning now. Compile time stuff. Everyone familiar with the XREF option on the compile statement? For if you haven't seen this, compile program, XREF, file name. You'll get XREF information. How many people here use Roundtable? A couple of you? All that where use and a bunch of the stuff the Roundtable does, it essentially parses XREF information for a lot of that. So, compile program, blah, blah. For a find statement, for a for each statement, will XREF tell me what indices are used? Yes, it will, because they are both compile time. They are both static constructs. Resolve the compile time, so great. And as a quick demo, although I am running behind, so I'm going to start running through here. Basically, I have a .p where I have a find and I have a for each, and you can see in the XREF, I added lines for clarity, but we see you want to look for search, and that tells you that's a query in the database. Order table, use cuss order. Here we have search. There's two of them on the same line, so that tells me we used two indices. Here we have a search, and we have the dreaded whole index, which means we did not bracket. I did choose an index. I chose the custom index, which is, guess what, the primary, but I used the whole thing. Again, just like the use index or release, if you see whole index, it doesn't mean you're wrong, but you better have done it for a reason. You better deliberately want to crawl through the whole table. There we go. If you go to queries, for those of you that like queries rather than finds and for each, if you have a defined query, that is versus create query. Defined query is, again, static. It is, therefore, compile time resolvable. Create query is not static, it's dynamic. Progress can't tell you what index to use because it doesn't know what the query is in the first place until at runtime when it goes to resolve that query. So, and there's a demo for that, it's the same thing, it'll just show you that it can't do anything. Sorry, I have to pick the days up. Got deep into stuff for a while there. So, what do? You talk to your queries. How many people talk to your computer screen as you work?
Oh, all the time.
It may be a one-way yelling. Sometimes it's conversation. So, how do you talk to a query? How do you ask it, did you have a problem? What index did you use? Did you bracket or not? Query information is a wonderful thing. So, you get a handle for your query, so you can look at its attributes and methods. If I have a static defined query, I kind of get the handle by default, query cust. If I do a create query for something dynamic, I create a handle variable and stick it in there. So how many people know that you can treat a static query as a dynamic query for a good part of it? I can say, hey, query, give me your handle, stick that in a variable. So I can now take a static query and treat it in some aspects as a dynamic query. I can't change the table it's using, but I can change its where clause. Ooh, some of you are doing that already, great. So how do you do this? Query handle colon index information will return a string that gives you information about the index used. Error status, I kind of cheated there. You look at your error status, you have errors. In your query handle, essentially going to be a comma-separated list. If the first value in the comma-separated list is whole index, it used the whole index. Otherwise, it is typically one value. That's the index I used. It might be index comma, index name, comma, index name, et cetera, if it used multiple pieces.
Can you go back to that for a minute?
You can get the presentation. I have a little fancy-dancy tool. I think Paul Kofilis recently pointed out, hey, you have a little mistake in here. I'm not sorting something the way I wanted to sort it. But it still works pretty well. Where's my... There we go. So for those of you that don't play around with the metaschema much, basically I have a program that queries the metaschema. It says, well, here's the databases I know about, here's the tables I know about, let me show you some stuff. Oh, by the way, let me show you some information about the indices. And then I can essentially build a WHERE clause. And when I hit this, it will prepare a query with that WHERE clause and evaluate it and say, here's what it is. So rather than write little snippets of code and have to throw them away, this is one way to say, hey, I want to test stuff real quick. This is fairly straightforward. There are a number of folks that have made tools out here. Go to like oehive.org. And there's some very large tools that not only do this sort of thing, but actually return the data. So you can see, hey, what would I get? Or do counting, you know, return the size of the bracket, et cetera. This is very basic, just enough to prove things. So that I can do things like, typically I go against the customer table. So I have, if I come over here, I have the indices I care about. Country post is on country and postal code. Custom is my unique index, name, sales rep. So if I do things like where sales rep equals A and name equals A, because I'm not returning data, so I don't care the values. One index, two indices, am I using the sales rep or the name field or both or what? Come on. Both. It's end, I have equalities, so I use two indices there. I prepared the query. So, and if I do, actually, if I leave this and I change this, that to a greater than, oops, I misspelled it, so it's going to say, you know, error, and tells me the error on my comparison. But if I change that to a greater than, sales rep, equality, name, range, which one trumps? Quality matches Trump, so it should select the sales rep. All right, yes we are, one index there, the sales rep. What if I change that end to an or? Ors are more inclusive, but I have a range match versus an equality match. Am I going to get one index or two? How many people say two? Everyone else says one? You're going to get one if you didn't raise your hand for two. With ORs, you get two. Because ORs say, as long as you're using part of the index in an equality or a range, you're good to go. When you have ORs in your query, it's very permissive, it's very inclusive. So all you need are equalities or ranges on the leading part of your index. So, sales rep equals A and what was that field? Postal code?
Yeah.
Postal code equals A. I have and, but I have equalities. Am I going to get one index or two?
One.
I hear someone saying one. Why?
Because it's your primary index.
He says one because it's my primary.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No,
not sales rep, customer. Right. Sorry.
Yep. So.
Just rep.
Okay, how many people think I'm going to get two indices, the sales rep and the postal country one? Couple of you think two. How many people think one? How many think I'm going to trick you? Oh, come on, everyone raise your hand for that one. Let's see what we get here. We get one, the sales rep. Why is that?
Because postal code had a second element to it.
Because postal code had a second element and we used the entire sales rep index. I did not have time to set up a demo where I had a two-field index and a three-field index and do two matches against each. And you'll get the two-field index because one of those little exceptions, Progress says, if you have equality matches and you use a full index, that will trump more quality matches, but not using the full index. So, And so you can play around here and evaluate stuff. Pretty nifty. Let me move on real quickly. Last thing we're going to talk about. Come on. There we go. Okay. So, OpenEdge 10, which is kind of old right now, in fact, part of it's getting retired, Progress introduced a log manager. How many different things are there you can log? About, what, 16 or so? So the log manager has a lot of different types of things you can examine, and you can say, I want this thing watched at a logging level of this, and go to this file, and I want these four things watched at a logging level of this, and all combined go to this file. It's something you can tweak at runtime, or you can do it from command line, and when you start up, you can do it at runtime. One of the things you can look at is query information, which tells you information about your queries. So from the command line, this dash client log, log entries, etc., and you get the values. Otherwise, you say log dash manager colon, and you set the log file name, the types, etc. So you could do something such as on control F5 anywhere, pop up this little window and ask for values to turn on or off the logging manager, to set the log file, to pick the thing you want to log, etc. Do that for a while, shut it back off. It's a very useful tool. I want to show you this real quick, because in the demo itself, I just kind of show you, hey, all I'm going to set is the log file name. I want query info, logging level. If you want to know how to use this, go into your ABL reference and look up log-manager, and it'll give you all the details. So I define a query, I do some stuff. Because remember, queries are runtime only. So if I were to compile XREF this, I would get no, or sorry, create queries are runtime only. So if I were to compile XREF, I would get no information. Here I have a static query, here I have a dynamic query. If I actually look at the log information for this, this is all query info log information, and we see as we scroll through here, here's a query name, it was query cust. It was done at compile time, so I know it's static. Down here, we got some source. If I had data in the database, you would get some information about how many records were bracketed and how many were used. We'll come down here a little bit. Useful, failed, records from server. I just have an empty database. Or a really bad query. Or both. Here's another query. Information that was prepared at runtime, and again, you get useful and failed results. Failed results means it bracketed this many, and then I excluded those because of other conditions not involved in the index itself. I have a whole index of it too. Yeah. So lots of good information here. You kind of have to dig through it, but if you really want to know, hey, I bracketed, it's still pretty good, right? Why is this so slow? Everyone writes fast code, right? Has anyone had a report not run as fast as they wanted to? Yeah. Almost guaranteed it's because of how you're retrieving the data. Yes, there may be other stuff going on. There's possibility of record lock, record contention or other stuff. But it's usually how fast you're pulling the data out. How many people here have used the Progress Profiler? Almost all of you. It's great. I haven't had to dig into this a while, but if you do a full install under like samples, I think is where it's found now. You'll see profiler, and it's progress code, and a database, and some other stuff. There's some basic instructions there. Essentially, what you do is you say, "I'm going to start a profiling session," and actually, just like the log manager. There is a system handle that you can access. So at runtime, you can say, turn it on, turn it off, do these things with it. So you could go into your application, get to a certain spot that you know is a trouble spot, hit your function key to bring up a little screen that lets you manipulate the system handle to say, turn on profiling, do all this, do all that. It will generate output files. and this is timing that is done. It discounts any user interaction, so if you hit an update statement and you walk away for 2 hours, it doesn't care. It doesn't count that. It only counts the backend stuff. And then it gives you code that's a little Windows application. So if you're a pure Unix shop, sorry. But it gives you code that for a Windows app, you can profile Unix stuff, take the information, the results of the profiler, pull it onto a Windows machine, and then run the app to look through it. And it will say, this process you did from the time you turned the profiler on to the time you shut the profiler off took a minute, 12 seconds. It ran these four programs. This one program took 90% of the time. It took this long. You dig into that program. This internal procedure took 80% of that program. This line took 30% of the time and was called 50,000 times. So it gives you all that information ability to drill down and look at stuff. Even if you don't have source code, you can still get to a certain level to see what's going on. And it gives you priceless information on timing of things. So, fine. There we go. Sorry I had to run so fast at the end of this. Demo code's available, all the code I showed you is available so you can play with it yourself. Questions, problems you've run into, things you had to solve or couldn't figure out? Everyone's an expert now?
That's awesome.
I thought I was last year, but you told me I still didn't
know enough. Unknown values, good or bad?
Bad.
They have to use this, but you gotta be very careful. Even if you are not using that unknown value in your query, you can see how it will impact the results of your query if you have unknown values in your data table. So thank you very much for attending. PugCentral.org for the files. You can get the presentation from there, but the presentation will also be available from the Pug Challenge site, just like everyone else's presentations. Please fill out the surveys for the talk. That's how we get feedback, not only to help me, but for me as an exec to let us know that my guy was kind of so-so, we'll not bring him back. This guy did really well, that guy did really well. So we really appreciate any kind of feedback you get. We're about halfway through the conference all told, so let's keep going and have a great time, and thank you very much for attending.